Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today I am proud to bring you the Satori Dialogues with Serpentis Satori. Greetings, Satori. How are you today?
All right.
Glad to hear it. And which areas are we going to explore today and talk about?
Let's talk about the underworld journey.
Okay. That sounds great. The Nekia.
Well, this has come up again because everyone who has seen Guardians 3 and knows someone who has come back asks if how it happens in Guardians 3 is what really happens.
That's a very interesting area of exploration.
No, it's one of the most ancient magical topics anyway.
Uh-huh.
Because
so
we have all those myths about it.
Uh-huh.
No, sorry, what you were going to say.
No, I was going to say it's very interesting that that movie would inspire those type of questions. But everyone's underworld journey is unique, and yes, everyone's underworld journey follows a certain course that leads to certain realizations. So it's very interesting that Guardians 3 would inspire people to ask those questions.
Well, they handle it completely correctly. The whole thing about if you come back from the dead, you are told it's not your time and you still have stuff to do.
It's true even in the modern scientific investigations into life after death, that aspect of it comes up very often. So how
That's
did these
the...
questions come about?
Well, these questions come about because it's a universal hero journey.
Mm-hmm.
And people have, and it's enough the same that people have been having the same experience as far back as Osiris, as far back when we start dealing with all of these journeys to death and back again.
Mm-hmm.
There are enough common threads, whether we're talking about the Irish underworld or the Egyptian underworld, that journey is that journey. We're just most used to it in either the Celtic context or the classical context.
Very true.
Because there are so many weird death cults in Greece.
Well, death is part of life, so it's no surprise that there would be monolithic death cults and local ones as well. And also
yeah,
there were cults to the mysteries were basically a way of bridging this world to the world beyond. And showing that there's interaction and interrelationship between them, and the mysteries had to remove the fear of death because you understood the process of death on a real deep level, not just with your mind.
Is the foundation of so much of Western civilization, and then the Christians tried to burn it all down.
Well, the Christians could tolerate no other explanation of death beyond their own, death and rebirth. And if anybody can die and come back, then what does that do to their mythic claim of sole proprietorship for resurrection?
Right. Especially if it's one of the most common human experiences in the way it is expressed in Guardians and in that more scientific book about death experiences. If that's all true and verifiable, that creates different questions.
Yes. It does create different questions, but it leads to many of the same answers.
Well, the answers have been the same since the time of the Homeric hymns and since the time of when the Egyptians started making their first maps of the underworld.
That has persisted mostly among role-playing game companies in the modern time, where that's a simulated voyage to the underworld, the Greek and otherwise, and they've had to parouse and explore the lore and then create maps to fit into the role-playing game experience. So I'm finding it interesting that I'm gaining insights from a game that normally would have come, even during my lifetime, not from popular entertainment, but from the study of old texts and the practice of certain types of meditations and so forth to experience certain realms and then to understand things that were happening to me in daily life that were actually very symbolic of death and rebirth. So it's very interesting. We have a lot more options today, like Guardians of the Galaxy 3, to explore, to experience these transitions.
Yeah, because up until the more scientific book came out in 2005 or 2007, It was a fairly taboo topic, although it had been covered in like X-Files and Supernatural episode. There's that episode where they told, oh no, the Winchester brothers have died all the time. You guys just aren't allowed to stay.
As you know, because we speak beyond this podcast, my recent Nekias have led me to all sorts of different ways of looking, you know, beyond what has been written about in the occult and popular culture literature. And I'm still trying to adjust these new ways of viewing death, rebirth, the afterlife, and so forth.
No, it all takes a while. I mean, that's the interesting thing about when I had my death experience and came back while I was still healing and had my month of bed rest, the science fiction channel was running Babylon 5 all afternoon, every afternoon.
Uh-huh.
And there's a whole thing in Babylon 5 about one of the main characters goes through a death and a rebirth. And there's a whole episode about you have to choose life or death, but right now you're in between, which is handled very well in Babylon 5 because I just rewatched it.
Are you
aware?
Which
is part of what led us to this conversation.
Are you aware that Babylon 5 is coming back as a animated thing where Sheridan is unstuck in time?
Yeah, and you know what day it comes out?
What day?
August 15th.
Ah. Very apt and appropriate.
That's interesting.
Considering that's my major holiday at that time, and it ends on August 15th, that's a very interesting placement for it.
And that's Hecate's major holiday.
As well, yes, I know.
So that's very interesting, and a bunch of us knew the movie was coming out sometime this year. And now that Babylon 5 is on Roku, a bunch of people are rewatching it because they know the movie. We knew the movie was coming eventually in some format this year because it was done. And JMS said so in like December that it's on its way. It's coming soon. And when it didn't drop in February, we're all like, okay, so is it August 15th, Michaelmas, or Thanksgiving? Which one is it going to be? Well, it's going to be, it sounds like it's an exploration of the other timeline, the timeline where Sinclair didn't go back.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of other weird things stapled in there.
And I heard there's going to be either a movie or a television show, a new television show after this.
That keeps stalling.
Yes.
But,
for years.
But that also happened. That also happened because they got new masters at Warner Brothers. So no one knows what's up with that right now. But maybe one of the other stations will buy it.
That would be.
So I guess
that
it depends
be,
on it.
That would be interesting.
Yeah, it would be very interesting to have that come back around.
He's been trying to bring that back since it went off, basically. And it's been one delay after another. There's been glimmers of hope, and then the glimmers of hope have settled back into darkness and unknown quality of the whole question. I was very surprised to see that something was finally coming out this year, and in actuality, not just in rumor. And I'm looking forward to what they do ahead. He wanted to reboot it and kind of do it over again. But as a fan, I prefer if he continued the story. I would find that much more exciting than a reboot.
Yeah, that would be much more interesting. But he's saying he wouldn't be telling the same story. He'd be telling us a different story of a different Babylon 5, whatever that means.
Well,
but yeah, I would prefer the story to be continued with the Lens Child.
Mm-hmm.
Because then we can just skip 30 years into the future and find out where everything is in that future.
Right.
Because that's already set up. That Delenn and Jakar have children. Delenn and Jakar have children that we can make player characters.
Uh-huh.
Because in the same way...
Great.
In the same way that Star Trek managed to get away from the Enterprise and get away from Picard for so long as it did, Babylon 5 could do that. They could just decide to be about... Yeah, or they could do spin-offs in each of the different civilizations. We never did get Psywar. Psywar is out there somewhere. However many seasons of Psywar were written, it's out there somewhere.
And some of the actors that played in the original Babylon 5 are still around and acting, so... It would be great to have them back, even if just as guest appearances every now and then.
Yeah, the same way Bester was. But because that show deals so straight on with death in the underworld, with those weird couple hours at the beginning of that one season, it also leads to people going, but is it like this? Like, yeah, you have to choose. Because Sheridan is offered the same choice Harry Potter is you're in an in-between place.
Mm-hmm.
You could choose not to go back, or you could choose to go back. That's your choice. Because he isn't someone who's having the underworld experience. We're like, nope. Turn around. You're not done yet. But not yet.
Yes, and that turns out to be an illusion, too, at some point.
Yeah, but those are the two, as death experiences go, those are the two forms. You either have the Harry Potter Sheridan of you don't have to go back, you could be done, other people can pick up from here, or
right.
You're told, no, you have to turn around. You're way too early for dinner.
Yeah, during mine, I was shown that I could leave. The things that I needed to do, I did, and other people can pick up from them. And I was shown that basically this megalithic life mission that I entertained was actually a very small gear in a very big machine. So I put things in perspective. But I decided, you know, I wanted to go back and finish more things, and I listed them, and then I came back. So I can't complain that about being here because I chose to be here.
So I'm the opposite situation. When I died, Hecate, because her voice has always been the same in my head. Ever since I was a child, her voice is her voice, and that was the
right.
joke in the previous episode about every once in a while I can hear her narrating. Every once in a while I can read the narration scrolling by on my teleprompter. Like, oh, narrator voice. Okay, Mom. But when I died, I have the experience Rocket Raccoon has. I realize where I am. Well, when I die, I have an experience that feels like going down a really long water slide. I don't go up and leave my body. I go down through something that feels like going down a 15-mile long water slide.
Okay.
Well, and then I land on my knees on the black beach. Everyone mm-hmm. knows that there's the first when you get there, the sand is black, and then there's the water. And I see the ships on the water, but there's no ship in front of me, and no one giving me no one to hand my coins to. Wherever I am not near a dock. And then Hecate's voice speaks, and she says, I know you're here. You should be here, but you have to go back. It is not yet your time. You are not finished. And then I feel like I'm, like, thrown back up the water slide. She hits rewind, and I go back up. And then I land in the ambulance, and I'm about to get needled. And of all of the people in New Orleans that girl has needled, she never had an experience where, like, someone came back before the needle. And if my accident case had gone to trial, I'm sure that would have been a lot of fun. A lot of fun to put her on the stand and be like, no, but he's cold and it's getting bad. So I grab the needle, I take the tip off the needle, and he chokes and spits and comes back up and starts swearing. And then I go to the hospital. A couple of my really powerful wizard friends somehow managed to call me inside the hospital. That was interesting, considering I'm not sure how anyone pulled that off. And then as soon as I'm released from the hospital, I go stay at my in-laws, and after Martha Stewart every day, Babylon 5, for some reason, is on Sci-Fi Channel all day long for those 2 months.
Hmm. So you get to watch it.
I get to watch it because I have bed rest. I have to drink milk and eat eggs and rebuild my legs.
You're covered, yeah.
Yeah, I can't do anything those 2 months. And because I'm not in my own home, I can't really do much magic. So Hecate brings me back to watch Babylon 5 when I get back. And then you get to the part where if you go to Zahadum, you will die. Because I do this, I will not be able to go to Zahadum with you. And then he gets to Zahadum, and he dies. And for people that just think that's a metaphor or an abstraction, that's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was nothing like my wife coming home the day after the episode where Sheridan comes back from the dead. I'm like, no, I just got to this place in Babylon 5 right before you got home from work. I'm like, how do you feel about that? No, this is my therapy. This is the kind of thing going, I know what I did to you, but think about it this way. Because when Babylon 5 was airing in the first run, before I leave Ohio, my favorite character is Jakar, because Jakar is just cool. when I get to New Orleans and I'm doing all of the stuff I need to take over New Orleans, I'm going through the same journey Sheridan is when he deals with, well, maybe I just need to be independent. Maybe we should just break away from Earth. Maybe I don't need supervision. And then I see it another time for my second time through. And then after I die, I come back and see it again. And only my friends who have seen it a couple times realize I had my accent, came back and watched Babylon 5. They're like, wait, you don't believe in coincidences.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, yeah. And when Hecate snapped her fingers and brought me back from the dead, she probably had Babylon 5 locked and loaded. That was all part of the plan. You have always been here. Don't worry about it. You have always been here.
That's the part of the like greater understanding, the fact that if time doesn't exist, you've always been here, you always will be here. There is no now or later.
Well, whenever someone started asking weird questions in New Orleans in my first couple of years, that was the answer that like the people who worked at the voodoo shops would give you. That's because you've always been here.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't matter how much you feel like you got kidnapped and dropped in New Orleans against your will. You've always been here.
Right.
That's why the gods didn't want to roll up new player characters. We were the people who were always there. That's why you weren't there. You weren't there because we had to have Wonder Woman. We need to have my work wife from the voodoo shop there as the child of Hercules, as the child of Zeus, doing the child of Zeus things. Using the child of Zeus magic items.
Yes.
But it was funny because she didn't know. At one point, there's a... toward the end of the 96th season of Babylon 5, something happens right the week Kosh dies. Because I'm at work when it's airing in live, so I'm going to have to get the video from someone in a minute or go over to their house on Sunday or something and watch it. One of the guys on my team actually, like, catches me as I'm coming out of the voodoo shop that night, and he's like, they killed Kosh. and she just looks at me like who the hell is Kosh? Kosh. Is that a good omen or a bad omen?
but the next replacement was Kosh too, but he was a different Kosh. So they were both Kosh, but they were not.
A very different personality. Yeah, and rewatching that, it's very clear that he has a very abusive relationship with Lyta.
Mm-hmm.
That rewatching that, there's a whole lot of that sounds like rape in an abusive relationship if you just read the words and don't think about what characters those are. In any other context, if someone replayed that conversation for me, it would be a classic abusive relationship. But that's also what's happening to the Vorlon when they start whipping out their planet killers. They're going mad as a race.
And yet there are future. At the end of Babylon 5, it's shown that we evolve into a Vorlon-like being, or we become the Vorlons, or we replace the Vorlons.
We replace the Vorlons and the Centauri replace the Shadows. Yeah. Because the big wheel keeps on turning.
Right.
And all of this has happened again, and all of this will happen. But, I mean, that's how we all – that's why that was really interesting. And rewatching it now, I knew the movie was coming soon. I just didn't know when. And the fact that I – Babylon 5 did get a new life when they put it on HBO streaming, when HBO started streaming, because it like Gargoyles, got a new life because young people had heard of it but didn't know what it was,
mm-hmm.
which is from the same year. It's also 1996. It's also all the weird how 1996 was explained to you who weren't in New Orleans. It's fine. We've got it taken care of. All those people have been here, and they're all fine with it in New Orleans. It's fine. But it got a new life when it was starting to stream on HBO. And when I got my new Roku TV, it was one of the first things I'm like, oh, Babylon 5. I probably should finish that before I buy the movie. Watch it again. But that's part of why the Vorlons introduced telepathy and all of that, was to make humans into them. Because the human Mimbari mixture becomes the Vorlons in a zillion years or whatever. In the same way, I assume the Centauri Narn thing becomes the new Shadows.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Because I thought that was implicit at the end, but I haven't rewatched the end yet because now I have no desire to speed through the end of Babylon 5. And now that you say such nice things about the BBC Atlantis show, I probably should just do that, and we should probably just do that as the next episode if there are only two seasons.
Yeah, Atlantis never resolved the time paradox, and they announced they were going into the Argo the next season, but they didn't really set the foundation for the Argo. So I like it because it communicates a lot of things that normally aren't communicated. And I enjoyed the show, but it wasn't one of those shows that a lot of people enjoyed. A lot of people
It's the same thing with their other project, Merlin. Friend of mine was going to give me Merlin for my birthday. She watched like half of it and then decided to send me something else. Like, no, I don't want to deal with this. We really shouldn't talk about any of these things. And now that I'm like almost over with Merlin, I understand like there's a monster of the week layer to it to make it kind of Buffy-esque. But the magic in Merlin is straight up, and the stuff about the old religion and magic and all that stuff, just like you were saying, when it is discussed, it's not discussed well. But the way it's discussed in Merlin made me occasionally pause and go like, okay, I have to go get some whiskey now to finish this episode. This is making me uncomfortable.
Yeah, I recently discovered a treasure trove of information that I didn't think was out there in some dark fantasy books. So I'm still making my way through them and trying to figure out why that's there.
It's there for whatever pieces of information are there that aren't in. Like, since you're talking about the underworld, there's a very good example of that. There's an author by the name of Garth Nix, who wrote a series about the Abhorsen. The Abhorsen are good necromancers. But all of those books have a journey through all seven levels of the underworld. And his descriptions of the seven levels of the underworld are disturbingly accurate. And because that was what the people who really practiced magic when Harry Potter was coming out, the Garth Nix books were coming out on the years Harry Potter books didn't come out. So it became the substitute drug. And if you worked at the voodoo shops and practiced magic and were reading Harry Potter, the Garth Nix books were like, oh, these are really interesting. But the Garth Nix books deal with, like, things crawling out of the underworld and heroes having to fight things back into the underworld and ancient sleeping gods and weird magic items, and they're not exactly lich character. sort of like a lich, kind of.
I have those. I remember you suggested reading them. I think I read the first couple of books, and I'll probably be returning to them, given things that are developing in my life at this particular point in time.
Lyrial is one of my favorite books. Lyrial is one of those great books that I wish I had had when I was that age. But when I was 16, all of the older guys in my life gave me all the Dune books, of course.
Mm-hmm.
My parents gave me the complete Shakespeare. My gaming buddies gave me all of the Dune books, so I could have them all in front of me, so I had no excuses not to go. So I would know there were books after God Emperor, so I would not give up in frustration with God Emperor and quit halfway through like everybody else does.
Yeah, I did that.
Everybody does that. That was one of the first questions you got asked if you were one of the – all the people who had always been in New Orleans had actually finished all the Dune books. And most of the people in the Hercules cult in New Orleans also had finished all the Dune books.
We must
And that's
say-
a really, really small segment. Well, you're a child of one of the gods, you're a magician, and you finished Dune. No wonder you've always been here. This is exactly what Poseidon built you for. Oh, you're the character for this video game.
For those who are just tuning in and they're not familiar with Satori or myself, for that matter, the word cult in antiquity did not mean the same thing that it does now.
No, we don't mean like the Trump cult. We mean like the people who worshipped Hercules in New Orleans.
Or as Herculeans prefer to phrase it, for people who follow the path of Hercules.
Well, at that time, because we were either children of Hecate or children of Poseidon with a couple of children of the Celtic gods mixed in, at one point, the redhead child of Hecate and Poseidon jokes that our group are the Atlantean Orthodox religion. Which eventually does lead to, like, First United Church of Atlantis. Like,
speaking
no,
of
I think Atlantean Orthodox is correct. Atlantean Orthodox is just weird enough to be true. It's just weird.
Well, speaking of Atlantis, the group that I'm currently forming, when I asked them what they wanted their mythology to be, the stories that we're going to be operating in and exploring, it was Greek mythology with Atlantis thrown in. So that should be very interesting.
Well, that's the echo of what I was doing right before I got married in New Orleans. That's what that group was before. One by one, the gods reassigned their own children to other places, but we were able to do the equivalent of your three levels in 16 months with everybody having to do their final initiations as solitaries. But we covered most of the material you're using in levels 1 through 3. We just, most of us had read most of the books in level 3. It was just that levels 1 and 2 took a little bit of pounding, and because Hecate was paying for everything, it was backwards. We did witchcraft before the hero's journey.
Yeah,
because the Atlanteans Atlanteans are a culture of swords, not wands. So the Atlanteans were more interested in having the people who work at the voodoo shop teach them magic. Which, you know, if you're Poseidon's children, if you have people who work at the voodoo shop to teach you magic, why not?
Yeah, right now the group is mostly there in level 2, most of the people. So I'm structuring and starting that very soon. One could argue I've already started it, but I haven't structured it the way it's supposed to be structured yet. It's in the process of being structured. But it'll be interesting doing it with an Atlantean theme.
Well, that's just the thing about doing it as understanding the archaeology of magic is what that issue really is understanding that we go from Stone Age shamanism to the Bronze Age mystery cults. And then we get into then Hermeticism and witchcraft are spawned by the mysteries. Because Hermeticism as we understand it doesn't seem to exist before the Hellenistic times.
As we understand it, that seems to be true, yes.
In the same way that what Circe does in the Odyssey doesn't really seem like what modern people call witchcraft. And what we have in the plays about Medea, I'm not sure a contemporary witch would consider witchcraft. But again, there's a definition of folklore children. There's a definition of witchcraft children of Hecate like, which is that it's practical folklore. Because ritual magic is completely different.
Yeah, I think folklore magic or folklore traditions are more accurate description than witchcraft or even magic.
What's one of those things that's a New Orleans and Atlantean thing? If you do magic, you're a practitioner. Witch is a subclass. Not everybody who does magic is a witch.
Right.
Most people who do magic are not witches. Like most witches are not Wiccan. That's a problem with the fact that everything was upside down in the 90s. That people assumed you were a Wiccan even if you were a Hermetic. Oh, yeah, Templars love being called Wiccans. That goes over so well.
Well, now you have the, like in our day, many years ago, it was the word pagan was one of those polarizing words, you know, because some people consider themselves pagans, other people didn't. They considered themselves Wiccans or neo-pagans, or there were all sorts of arguments going back and forth over these words. Now it seems that witch has become a contentious term, and you have witches, and you have Wiccans, and then you have Wiccans with one C or two Cs, and you have all sorts of things, all sorts of conversations taking place, and witchcraft itself is under question.
So witchcraft itself is the most broad category, because that essentially means you are a practitioner. Because the rest of you haven't learned what practitioner is, because when you don't know, someone's a practitioner, and that applies equally well to a high-ranking hermetic wizard as it does to a Catholic exorcist, as it does to a voodoo priestess, as it does to a root lady. And bone reader. They're all practitioner because it is a practice. And you practice and then you walk the path. You're a practitioner. Part of the problem people who don't live in Atlantis or New Orleans don't understand is that all of those other words are the specific words. Practitioner means I do it.
Right.
Like Morpheus says, you can talk about the path or walk the path. Practitioners practice. Which is why in New Orleans and Atlantis, you don't actually retire, you get out of practice. When I was married, I got out of practice with hoodoo because I was doing mostly hermetic high magic stuff.
Uh-huh.
Lately, when I moved into this current building and had two witches living with me on the same floor, our drunken conversations were that my witch next door was very much an Anglo witch, so she would use all of the English words. Like, I say voodoo doll, she says puppet. I say gree-gree, she says satchel. Same thing. It's
mm-hmm.
all the same thing. Low magic is all the same the whole world over. It's just that, you know, people in Rome didn't have really good access to ginger. People in, well, I mean, ginger probably is what mandrake is. Probably why it was treated as being so super rare in the Middle Ages.
That's an interesting observation.
Well, because one of my conversations recently was a friend trying to ask me about, like, the real version of the graveyard spell in Harry Potter. Part of the end of this conversation with Cersei was she going like, well, but then, so the graveyard spell in Harry Potter, you could actually do. Like, yeah, my work wife from the voodoo shop and I have always teased each other about, like, that sounds like you're writing, darling. If I had to write a cemetery, if you had to write a cemetery spell and only had 20 minutes and only had a pot of coffee, you would write something very similar to that spell in Harry Potter. And she's like, but you wouldn't. I'm like, no, mine is much weirder and darker. And then I saw The Adventures of Merlin, and I'm like, yeah, because you use the coin to bring Lancelot back. Oh, my God. Because I use the coin to buy you back from death. What? Oh, God. Oh, God. You're showing this to children? You're showing this?
Yeah, I can understand that. I see some cartoons and wonder who thought of this to put this in here.
I was that way with Gargoyles, because there's a whole thing in Gargoyles about Tatiana and Puck in the middle of Gargoyles. That was important with what was going on in New Orleans at the time, and once again was just a tiny bit behind reality. Like I was just a tiny bit ahead of Sheridan because I'm a Scorpio and he's like a Gemini or something. So I was ahead until that day when my buddies who were all watching Babylon 5 while I was working at Reverend Zombies, like, they killed Kosh. And Whisper was like, who's Kosh? Who's that? Is he a friend? God. How do we even begin to explain this?
I love what they did with the Vorlons in Babylon 5. In fact, I have a Vorlon on one of my my altars. Because, again, the Vorlon is whatever you expect the Vorlon to be. Just like Hecate proclaims in antiquity, you know, that basically they appear as we need them to appear or as we want them to appear. And the Vorlons are the same, and they make that clear in that one episode where he becomes like an angel. He becomes all sorts of religious figures, depending on who's watching. And that is
that's the Masks of God thing. Well, I said that's the Masks of God thing, that there are...
Found.
Right.
I also have Q there, and I have a Promethean from Prometheus, because those two are different aspects of God or the gods that you need to contemplate.
Yeah, the weird paradigms. They both arise from.
Yeah, that's a big part of the initiatic path, especially when you're dealing with the underworld, is what you're experiencing beneficial or inimical. And sometimes it's not very clear.
Well, with all the underworld work, with all the underworld stuff a bunch of us were doing during COVID, we were all reminded that when you go into the underworld, you aren't the same person when you return, and nor do you return to the same world.
Right.
Both you are changed by whatever happened to you in your journey.
Profoundly.
And yes. the world has had some time to change while you were out. While you went down the stairs to use the bathroom, the world has changed.
Well, unless you keep track of things in our world, it's sometimes hard to notice when.
No, but there are still subtle differences. There are still subtle differences in cause and effect and in other people's motivations when you return. It's not quite the same.
Right.
It's similar, but it's not exactly where you were. And that's the most dangerous part about that.
For me, one of the things that I keep track of, not religiously or not consistently, but I do keep track of it, is Edgar Casey and Atlantis. That seems to change dramatically in my shift between the worlds. You know, what actually happened and what people say happened, and it does change. And some of this changes back and forth. But certain things that are in the popular imagination, and they could be historical events, they need not be, metaphysically focused, but some historic events, too, did not happen or did happen in particular timelines. But again, it's very subtle, and unless you're paying attention to things like that, it's very easy to miss the clues that you're not in the same world.
Yeah. That's one of the major issues about spending too much time in the underworld is people do notice you change if you spend too much time in the underworld. Like when a bunch of us were doing this stuff during COVID, people did start to pick up on like weird things that were just a little bit different in some of us. But it isn't anything obvious like your tattoos are different. It's just there are little subtle things that are different.
Right. I'm also finding as I get older, because now I'm in my 60s, how much of the world is created through our perceptions, that our brain actually fills in details, you know, and we experience those details rather than what's actually there.
Right.
So I always knew that happened because I've been playing with my brain since childhood, but I never was aware of the extent to which your brain just fills in blanks, you know, and sometimes quite randomly and sometimes, in a puzzling way where that's not what's actually there, but your brain put it there just to weave together the reality that you're navigating through. So if you're looking constantly for the magician's other hand, let's say, you realize how much of the world is constructed by your brain. And that is something amazing to study.
Yeah, especially when there are glitches.
Yes, yes.
When the universe obviously has to go to a commercial break.
Yes, and again, it's amazing. You wonder why your brain chose to do this. And if you work with dreams too, especially if you become lucid in the dream, and you become aware that this 3D sense around experience you're finding yourself in is something being that wasn't prepared or scripted. It's something your brain is generating as you move along. The powers of the brain become, you know, godlike.
Well, I'm one of those people that thinks that's the definition of magic. I'm one of those people that, like the men who stare at goats people, think magic is just using your entire brain power.
Right.
I don't know if most people use 10% or whether or not that's folklore too. But most people do not use, like in Babylon 5, if everybody could do everything we could do, we could be the Vorlons. Every man and woman is a star. If we understood... But that is partially why we hide it behind the language of magic, to make it harder, because it, like you and I said in a previous podcast, it is like doing push-ups. Doing tarot is just like doing push-ups. Most people can only do 20 minutes of push-ups. I used to do tarot for 16 hours a day during Mardi Gras. So the muscle that tarot is in me is really strong.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've been working on that muscle since I was 13, and I spent 5 years doing it professionally. So that muscle in me is quite strong. About a year ago, one of my witch friends on YouTube did a piece on what is called magpie, or a garbage oracle. It's the less creepy version of the bones. Back in the old days, it was called bones or lots. Today we call it magpie because today it is like these like weird fairy items. The fairy items have cycled out of your mojo bag, but you don't want to throw away, so you use them for divination. I am much less good at that than I am at tarot. Like, I could never actually have anyone pay me for a rune reading. I am so awful at runes.
Really? I taught runes for many years. I found them very easy at the energies to work with.
Well, see, that's because that's because that's the kind of motorcycle you like. You like the runes. I like the tarot. my brain accepted the tarot at an early age, so trying to do runes makes me. I'm not comfortable enough with it on that level. I mean, I've used it for astral projection. I've used it for other stuff, but I'm not as comfortable with it as I am with tarot. And I'm less comfortable with runes than I am with the magpie because of how I've developed my muscles.
With me, it's been synchronicities that I've focused on, and dreams and alternate experiences and anomalies, not just synchronicities, but as you've stated, anomalies or glitches. You know, I find that the glitches convey a lot of information, even though they're kind of difficult to read sometimes. So my brain is imprinted with those things more than the tarot, more than the runes. Although I have some oracle decks that I find, I'm familiar with the mythology so deeply, given to my years of study and immersion, that as long as it contains images, my brain can weave all sorts of connective pathways and extract information from them.
But see, that's back to practitioner. I'm a very good practitioner with the tarot, and I'm very bad with the runes.
Okay. Makes sense.
Well, in the same way, it was really odd in 1996 that I am a high-level hermetic alchemist, and my paycheck job is Reverend Zombie's House of Voodoo.
Mm-hmm.
That still causes me problems in both worlds. Because hermetics have their issue. Well, I mean, this is how you and I met in the first place. That
right.
Pagans are a little bit distrustful of voodoo. Hermetics are definitely distrustful of voodoo, even though the oldest practitioner in New Orleans, my first year, when she saw my necklace and realized what group I was a member of. When everybody is drunk toward the end of the ritual, she comes over and we drink a very expensive bottle of rum together. And she tells me that I'm not a precursor, I'm super retro. 100 years ago, there were lots of my brothers at these rituals. Today, I am alone. You will not always be alone. Now you are a precursor, but you are... It's the first is the last, the ending is the beginning thing.
I can understand that. The question I get asked when I venture too far into the, you know, outside of the circle that I've created is, where the hell did they dredge you up from? And my answer is very similar to the explanation you just explained.
Well, that's because you and I are... There's a song by Sisters of Mercy called First and Last and Always. I'll send you the link to that after we're done, because that is one of Hecate's children trying to explain to the young girls what this is about. That children of Hecate always have the, like, am I very old? Hecate's a very old goddess, so when Hecate wants to summon her special forces team, you get people from all over the multiverse. And there are so many bloodlines within my family that it's really amusing to watch the, like, am I older than you game in Hecate House. It's almost as much fun as watching it in Zeus's house or Poseidon's house. Because then people get into, like, is Percy Jackson older than Mara of Atlantis in the DC universe? Which one of those two is older? Is Percy Jackson a reincarnation of Perseus? Is that true?
Well, that's how they, the name is Perseus, Percy's name. I believe he modeled it partially on Perseus, but not extensively.
Well, right. So that's why the Child of Zeus is Jason. But that's a topic for another time, once those all come out on Disney Plus.
And we only have like 3 minutes left. I have a question to ask. If you don't want to answer it now, that's fine. But I'm starting several small things. One of them is Star Trek focused, and the other one is I'm bringing back the voices from long ago. The voice of Hercules, the voice of Zeus, the voice of Athena, the voices. Which voice would you like to be?
I think I was hired this week to be the Morrigan's voice.
Okay.
I think you have someone else. I think you have one of my sisters to be Hecate. I think the Morrigan wants a voice at your table. And when I finish Merlin in an hour or two, I will have completed what I need to have the ring.
So we will speak. Nate has been very present through her people. And several other surprising deities are getting involved. So we will have that conversation off the air.
But I think the Morrigan has been trying to hire me for this, and I have to get her a new holy symbol this week. And my grail, which I have had for 4 years, broke this week.
Ooh. That is interesting. The grail's been popping up in my life quite a lot lately, too. And that was one of the topics I wanted to bring into today's conversation, but it didn't happen. So it will happen, I guess, between shows.
All right. I will talk to you in a minute.
Be well, my friend. Thank you very much. And thanks to all our listeners. Whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, whether you called and you're patiently waiting in our queue, or whether you're going to check us out later on demand, until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Have a great day and a happy Father's Day to all.